And welcome to the midday. I'm Norman Gilliland here in our Buck studio today. We'll be having some live music during the hour, and we're working around the set for tomorrow night's productions of My Friend Irma and Quiet Please during Old Time Radio. So we have quite a bit of clutter and an obstacle course for my guest today. His name is Raymond Benson. Welcome to the midday.
It's great to be in Madison. Thanks, Norman.
Coming up from Chicago, and we're here to talk about this 50th anniversary phenomenon, not of the books, but of the James Bond films. We'll be getting into a fair amount of the music from those films. It turns out there's lots and lots of it. But as far as your experience with James Bond is concerned, you're a composer, but you also wrote six of the James Bond books after Ian Fleming and his estate contacted you specifically
right.
to write?
Yeah, after his death, his estate decided periodically they would hire other authors to write the novels. And I was the third continuation author and first American. And I did six original books and three movie novelizations. That is, you know, they gave me the screenplay and I turned them into books.
You know? So not all the films were books in the first place.
Right, right. More recently, the films have been all original screenplays.
And you, though, had a pedigree for being invited to write those books by the Fleming estate because you had this Bond compendium.
Oh, yeah, the James Bond Bedside Companion. It was published in 1984. When I researched that, it took me 3 years to write it. I went to England and I met members of Ian Fleming's family and his business people, and we got along and they liked the book when it came out, and so we just stayed in touch for the next 10 years. And when John Gardner, who was the author before me, decided he didn't want to do it anymore, they just called me out of the blue and just said, "You want to give it a shot?"
And so you gave it six shots.
Yeah, yeah. I had my six, as Bond says.
Was that daunting at all for you, that first book?
Well, it was certainly, I knew I could do it. And it was daunting. It was big shoes to fill, not only Ian Fleming's, but John Gardner and Kingsley Amis before me. I put the pedal, to the metal, whatever you say, and just plowed ahead. And I traveled to all the locations that I wrote about and really gave it my best shot.
And so the book, the first book in particular, what was the next phase? You then showed it to the Fleming estate, or?
The first novel?
Yeah.
I had to write an outline of a story on spec first for them to approve, as well as the British and American publishers. Once that was approved, then I had to write the first four chapters on spec. And that had to go through the approval process, too. Once that was greenlit, then I got the contract.
And everybody was happy then.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was good. And I did it for 7 years. So, and now, those books now, the separate editions are all out of print, but they are in print in anthologies today. One is called The Union Trilogy that has three of the books plus a short story, and the other one's called Choice of Weapons, and that has three of the books plus two short stories. But they're all available separately as ebooks for the Kindle.
Did you go back and dip into the Ian Fleming originals as you were writing these books, or did you just kind of put that behind you and soldier on?
Well, I knew the books in an, like the back of my hand. I was very much an expert on those books. But every author kind of has his own parallel universe with the Bond thing. I was told I could ignore or use anything that the other continuation authors did, although I shouldn't, contradict anything Fleming said. But they wanted my books. This was in the This was during the Pierce Brosnan era, so they wanted my books to sort of reflect or mirror the Brosnan type films.
Which really is a kind of a different Bond character, isn't it?
Than the
original Ian Fleming or the Sean Connery.
Right. The book Bond and the movie Bond are very different. The book Bond is much more human, much more serious. He's more of a brooder. He's got a lot of vices. He's ruthless. He's cold. He doesn't have a sense of humor. So I really tried to make my Bond like him, but placed him in the late 90s, which kind of made him anachronistic, but that also made him stand out.
Speaking of things that stand out, the first composer for the James Bond films, and this takes us back 50 years now.
50 years.
Dr. No would have been John Barry.
Actually, it was Monty Norman.
There was the one before John Barry?
Oh, yeah. Monty Norman was the composer for Dr. No. He was from the theater. And Cubby Broccoli and Harry Saltzman, the producers, they knew they wanted songs of some type in the show. So they hired this guy who wrote songs, Monty Norman. And he wrote the songs like Under the Mango Tree and Jamaica Jump Up and all these things that you hear in the movie. And he came up with a James Bond theme, but they weren't really thrilled with it. And so he dug back into his archives and came up with an unused song from a musical that was never produced. And he submitted that, and they kind of went, well, that might work, but I think it needs a spin on it. And so they went out and they found John Barry, who at the time was conducting his own little sort of jazz combo called the John Barry Seven. And they gave Monty Norman's theme to him, and he completely sort of rearranged it and turned it upside down and added a swing section and put an electric guitar in it. And it became the James Bond theme that we have, you know, that we know and love.
So here it is. That would typically get us, what, through those very evocative credits?
Yes,
and then
yeah, that
was last
the
little
yeah.
lick, then.
And the guitarist, he was a teenager named Vic Flick was his name. And he was a member of John Barry Seven, and he played the guitar on the first four or five Bond soundtracks. Then he kind of disappeared. I don't know what happened to him. Did some of his own work. But then they brought him back much later, like in the late 80s and the 90s, to play again.
So. Did they use that Bond theme then for all of the, how many movies have there been?
Well, they've used the theme has appeared in every movie in some form, reorchestrated or rearranged. But sometimes they've used that actual track, you know.
So sometimes the producers do it from scratch, and sometimes
yes.
they just bring in file.
Yeah, exactly. Now, they were so impressed with John Barry's orchestration for that they hired him to do the score for the next film, which was From Russia with Love. And even though he wasn't established as a songwriter then, they got somebody else to write the theme song, and that was Lionel Bart, who wrote the From Russia with Love theme song. But Barry did the rest of the score, and that really kind of started the sound that we are familiar with the Bond films. The thing is about the Bond films is, you know, the striking thing was the editing and the sets and the villains and the girls and Sean Connery and the music.
And also the gimmicks, of course.
Yeah, and the gadgets.
Yeah.
And the music was very much a part of the whole impact. And John Barry, I think, is very much responsible for creating what we kind of think of as the spy sound, the secret agent sound, you know, of the 60s.
Yeah, I mean, the just listening to it here did, I must admit, make me think a little bit of, I think, slightly earlier movies. That's the Pink Panther.
Well, Pink Panther was later. That was 64.
Was it later? Yeah. So it was actually more of taking its cue from Bond.
Yeah. Now, this next piece is from Russia with Love. It's called 007, and John Barry wrote this. It was kind of an alternative James Bond theme, and they've used this in several of the films, too.
Russia with Love, that was then the second of the Bond films, obviously another Sean Connery, and it must have followed pretty quickly on the heels of the first one,
Dr.
No.
Later.
Just in 63?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because the third one coming up is maybe the most famous in terms of the music.
Well, it's the one that broke through the ceiling. It's the one that basically made James Bond a household name, and that was Goldfinger. And the score, especially, it became the blueprint for all the rest of the scores. And they trusted John Barry enough to do the title song this time. So he wrote it with Leslie Bricusse and Anthony Newley. They wrote the lyrics.
Was that Shirley Bassey?
And Shirley Bassey sang it, yes. And it was a huge hit. And actually, the soundtrack album hit number one in the United States.
So what is it, do you suppose, about Goldfinger, the film, and the music that still makes it, after 48 years, such a standout?
Right. Well, the movie itself just kind of came at the right time in the right place. It was coming out of England, which at that time, things coming out of England were considered very cool. We had the Beatles, we had swinging London, the mod scene and all that, and Bond was a part of that package. And these were new kinds of films. They were very, he was an anti-hero, and we didn't really have anti-heroes in the movies at this point. And, they kind of pushed the boundaries of sex and violence and glamour and glitz and high-tech gee-whiz stuff.
And you had that iconic Golden Girl,
of course. Absolutely.
Great visual.
Absolutely. I say that Goldfinger is the most influential film of the decade of the 60s because it inspired so many things. I mean, look at all the television shows and the imitation movies that came after that.
I will barely even mention Get Smart.
Yeah, well, that's one of them,
A Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yes, absolutely. And then there were the Flint movies and, the Matt Helm movies and everything,
Still with us to a great extent.
Yes.
I think of all those Ocean's 11 and Mission Impossibles and all of that.
And the Bond films were the Star Wars of that decade. They were the big blockbuster that people stood in line around the theater to see. And it was huge.
And what about the music for Goldfinger that just makes that stand out, too?
It just, it combined everything. It had all the brassy sound, the sexy sound, the intriguing sound. This next cut is a deep track from the Goldfinger soundtrack. What's one of my favorite tracks? It's called Odd Job's Pressing Engagement.
Remember Odd Job.
Yes, what it does is it combines the Goldfinger theme with the James Bond theme. And Barry does it very cleverly.
So I'm sure a lot of people out there saw the visual. I had to be reminded. But what's going on there is Odd Job is, of course, this large, dangerous Asian
henchman.
Yeah, henchman with the top hat that knocks your head off.
Right.
Is out there having a car compacted during this film.
Yes, with a body inside.
Yeah, of course.
Right. Well, Barry was, you can hear, harps and you can hear vibraphones as well as the big brassy sounds and the violins. Very, just his arrangements were just
very rich.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Back with Raymond Benson, author of six of the post-Ian Fleming James Bond books, also a composer. And we're celebrating 50 years of that music for the movies, for the James Bond films. And we tend to overlook, I suppose, at least I do, that not all of the music that's written for these films actually gets used.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, a lot of it does get left on the cutting room floor. And some of the CDs have been reissued with some of the outtakes, which is kind of nice for us collectors, us fanatics.
And there's one that's called Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Right. Now, the Thunderball, which was the next of the fourth film, the title song had a little tortured history. Barry wrote with Don Black a song called Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which was going to be the title song. And they got Dionne Warwick to sing it. And she did a marvelous job. I've heard the piece that they did. But for some reason or another, they decided not to use it. And then they hired Shirley Bassey again. And she came in and did a recording of Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. But then at the 11th hour, the producers said, you know, we really want a song with the word Thunderball in the title. So Barry quickly wrote the theme for Thunderball and got, and since it was more, a more masculine song, they got Tom Jones to sing the title song. But we have here the Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang that Shirley Bassey did, the unused Thunderball title song.
Why the zero is double, Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
She can belt it out.
Yeah, Shirley Bassey, whether it's Goldfinger or Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yeah. She did three of the title songs. She also did Diamonds Are Forever and Moonraker.
And, you know, without ever having heard that, I can say that you would recognize it right away as for a Bond film if... Yeah. Never used for one, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very much fingerprints on that work. And now that was John Barry also.
Yes, it was.
Behind that one. We'll be hearing some more of those James Bond themes. And also, in just a moment, we're going to have a, would you call it a medley that you're going to be playing, Raymond?
Yes. In 2002, John Barry was given an award in London, and I was invited to play the piano at the event. I created a suite of Bond music that he wrote. This was in front of him, as well as 500 other people, the producers of the movies and everything. And so I tailored it just to have John Barry music at the time. And when I finished it, he came up on stage and gave me a big hug, which is a moment I will live with forever. Yeah. But the one I'm going to play today brings in other composers as well.
Do you want to identify the themes ahead of time, or are we going to let people guess?
No, people are going to have to guess.
All right, good. All right. So, and what do you call this?
I just call it my James Bond suite.
Okay. Raymond Benson's James Bond suite.
Thank you.
And that was Raymond Benson, my guest today for the midday, with his James Bond suite. And it makes me think, well, I must not have seen all of the films. I thought I had. There were a couple of themes I knew were themes, but I wasn't sure which film. But I heard Goldfinger, I heard You Only Live Twice, and I heard Live and Let Die. That's the Paul McCartney one, right?
Right, right.
And The Spy Who Loved Me.
Right. And you heard Skyfall.
Skyfall, of course. Yeah, the latest, which I have seen,
Adele,
actually.
Yes,
yes, yeah. That's right. Mm-hmm. And so where are you now with your personal Bond career, Raymond?
Books? You know, the books are still there. They're still available. But I've gone on to, you know, do other things. I'll write my own thrillers. I've got a new series called The Black Stiletto, which is being actually developed as a television series right now.
The first two books
are out, and the third one comes out in April. That's if you can check it out on theblackstiletto.net.
So, all right.
Yeah.
So you're very much connected still. Back with Raymond Benson, we're celebrating 50 years of James Bond movie music during this hour of the midday. You know, and it turns out there's quite a bit of classical music in those James Bond movies, too. We'll get to that maybe in a minute. There's Bach's Air on the G String. There's Beethoven, variations on a Rococo theme by a composer whom I won't mention. There's Borodin. There's Stravinsky and Tosca. There's even Vivaldi's Four Seasons and View to a Kill. And there's even one of the bad guys, Drax, who is playing a Chopin etude, I think it is.
Yep.
So it's in there more than we realize, but I think so often that music, we hear it without realizing that we're hearing it because we're so caught up in the marriage of the visuals and the music.
That's right.
Now, speaking as I was not long ago of You Only Live Twice and Paul McCartney, there's this great fight scene at the Kobe dock which calls for some music.
Right, yeah. This is a track from You Only Live Twice. This is just a wonderful shot in the movie with Connery running across the rooftop of this dock, fighting all the bad guys. And let's hear it.
It's one of the more memorable movies, if only because it had George Lazenby in it, and he's kind of a footnote in the whole Bond phenomenon.
Not that bad. I think he's underrated. I think he would have really grown into the role. And the movie itself is, you know, all the hardcore Bond fans really consider it one of the best films.
I mean, do they?
If you see the polls by Bond fans, it's in the top five.
Well, they do develop the character a little bit.
Yeah, and it's very faithful to the book.
And how are these movie scores actually produced for the Bond films, or has it varied over the last 50 years? I mean, you see pictures of the conductor, you know, leading the orchestra as they got the film in the background. But how is it usually done?
That's usually how it's done. Barry would often compose some of the pieces beforehand, like some of the title songs, so he could work it into the score. But then, you know, the timing was always all based on the final cut of the movie, and they've got to do that in the last week or two of the production. You know, that the composer is one of the last things that happen.
And we do tend to overlook how precise, especially in a Bond film, that timing has to be. The music has to, if it's going to end with the chase scene, it has to end right there, and then the cut to the next scene.
Yeah. I should just quickly mention some of the other composers. George Martin did Live and Let Die with Paul McCartney doing the song. Marvin Hamlisch did one. Bill Conti did one. Eric Serra, David Arnold, and the most recent one is Thomas Newman.
Now, overall package, Raymond, music, production values, locales. Do you have a favorite Bond film of the, how many are there now, 20 or something?
Well, 23 official ones and two rogue ones. My favorite Bond film is still From Russia with Love, number 2. I'm that age where I grew up with the original Connery films, and, you know, they just, you know, they're engraved in my soul. So, you know, the Skyfall is really good, though. I think it's great. I wouldn't be surprised if it gets an Oscar nomination
really?
For Best Picture.
For Best Picture?
Yeah.
The thing with From Russia with Love is it did have some of that great, didn't it have mountain scenery?
Well, it was a train, you know, mostly on the Orient Express, mm-hmm. and you had Robert Shaw and Lotta Linja, and had a great cast.
It had Lotta really Linja in it.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, she was
Kurt Vile's other half.
That's
wow.
Right. That's right.
Well, I guess if you go back... what to 1963?
Yeah.
It was a whole different, like two different generations yes. back in terms of performers. Well, thanks for sharing your suite, which I have received several inquiries about. Is that commercially available? But alas, no.
Well, no.
You get it here on the midday, and that's that, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
And certainly a pleasure it was to have you and your Bond music sharing the hour of the midday with
me
today.
Well, I was really happy to be here, Norman.